Ground Cover News is a nonprofit street paper that was founded in April 2010 as a means to empower low-income persons to make the transitions from homeless to housed and from jobless to employed. Vendors purchase each copy of the Ground Cover News regular edition at our office for 50 cents. This money goes towards production costs. Vendors work selling the paper on the street for $2, keeping all income and tips from each sale. This audio production was made possible by the Ann Arbor District Library, recorded at Fifth Avenue Studios. If you consistently enjoy Ground Cover Speaks, continuing to buy physical newspapers from Ground Cover vendors ensures that we can sustain production. The physical paper and in-person interaction is at the heart of our work. You can find the link to our next audio recording in the upcoming print issue of Ground Cover News. Thanks for listening.
Special thanks to our print advertisers, the People's Food Co-op, St. Francis of Assisi Parish, First Baptist Church, Bethlehem United Church of Christ, the Office of Community and Economic Development, Cineholic, Art on a Journey, Ann Arbor for Public Power, Four Directions, and the Ypsilanti Food Co-op.
Hear Me Out, Give What Is Asked For, by Sherry Wander from the Daytime Warming Center. For many folks, this season involves gift giving, and certainly it is a season where many folks make donations to shelters and groups working with economic refugees from capitalism. So here are some tips for donating. If you have stuff that you want to donate, ask who needs it. Give what is asked for. If it wasn't asked for, check first. Otherwise, your donation might not only go unused, but also make more work for the folks that you are trying to support. Remember that many grassroots nonprofits and mutual aid groups don't have a lot of storage space. Be mindful that no matter how adorable that bikini is, we don't have a place to put it in December, nor do we have room for that snowsuit in August. If you're unsure, ask if groups have storage for off-season stuff. If you can fix zippers, sew on buttons, or make other improvements, please do so before donating. If you think an item is not in good enough condition for you to wear, it's probably not in condition for someone else to wear. The time between Thanksgiving, Christmas, and the New Year often creates awareness of needs, and it is so beautiful that folks donate stuff then. It is great to give to a grassroots group or mutual aid project a gift in someone's name. The challenge is that the needs are still there in the 11 other months of the year. And again, see the above notes on the challenge of storage. If your holidays include the tradition of gift giving, consider giving the gift of a pledge to donate goodies at some other time. A promise to bring needed items when you're doing spring cleaning, a portion of your garden's harvest, or a pledge to shop at a local food pantry or bring groceries in the summer months when donations tend to drop off. And then mark it on your calendar and be sure to honor your commitment. Remember that shelters are often crowded and loud, and folks don't have lots of storage space. Loud or huge toys are often not practical and can unintentionally lead to conflict or tears when they need to be re-gifted or stored elsewhere. Cash donations are great and can allow for an individual or group to make their own decisions about what is most needed. Most importantly, remember, relationships matter. All of the above are easier if you know the folks that you're giving to. Give your time. Get to know folks. Be vulnerable with them. And be in community. Thanks for reading this. Thanks for caring and wanting to give generously, with hard-nosed hope and fierce love. Requested items for donation at the Daytime Warming Center. Things we almost always need. Bus tokens and one-day bus passes, always. $5 to $10 gift cards to coffee shops. Socks, hand warmers, gloves, and mittens. Long johns or thermals. This is the only item we ask be new. Hygiene items, especially razors, small things of Q-tips, and single-package toothbrushes and lotion. Winter boots in good condition. Other useful things to check in about. Winter clothing. Men's more so than women's, hoodies, sweatshirts, jeans, flannel shirts, sweatpants, belts, winter coats, larger sizes needed, blankets, hats and scarves. The Ypsilanti site, the Freight House, is open Monday through Thursday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., but please bring donations by 5 p.m. The Ann Arbor site at St. Mary's Student Parish on Thompson and Williams until January 31st, see more information on page 4, is open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Please bring donations before 3 p.m.
Meet your vendor. Amiri Jade Bay, vendor number 660. In one sentence, who are you? I am a young Moorish American woman. Supreme honors to the Prophet Nobadra Ali, peace be upon him. When and why did you start selling ground cover newspapers? I began selling ground cover newspapers to meet my neighbors, provide extra income for myself, and to gain more sales and writing experience. What is your life motto? My life motto is wake up every day and do your best. What is your comfort food? Salads and halal tacos. If you were stranded on a desert island and could only bring three things, what would they be? My man, a water filter, and a cooking pot. If there was a theme song for your life, what would it be? One Step at a Time by Jordan Sparks. What change would you like to see in Washtenaw County? I would like to see more people happy and smiling like it used to be when I was growing up here. What is one question you wish you were asked more often? Do I still plan to have a music career? Which I do. I am working on a new CD right now. Shameless plug. My singer name is Mary Jade Music. One word. So be on the lookout for that if you love new music.
Ground cover solutions continued. Scoop Stevens. Most Americans are literate enough to work a job and make a living, but not civically literate enough to participate in democratic governance. The vocational training mindset permeates our nation, and like docile slaves, Americans always have to be doing something to please their master, the almighty dollar. In the 1930s, social critic Albert Nock wrote about the proliferation of diploma mills, and it was his opinion that we should only confer a bachelor's degree to those who were educated in the liberal arts. After World War II, this was not possible because 12 million military veterans were promised the opportunity to earn a college degree. The standards were degraded to accommodate these veterans, and they have continued to be degraded. Now we have degrees in rural estate, interior design, communications, you name it. Fortunately, the university is not the only institution fostering intellectual pursuits these days. Since July 2010, Ground Cover News has provided Washtenaw County with news about homelessness, but no real effective solutions. In my article, Ground Cover News Evolution Path, I presented a plan that could provide solutions. In my opinion, homelessness must be tied into something bigger for rural solutions to be discovered. The New Testament writers were inventing a religion to replace Judaism. Matthew, Luke, and John were not written until after the Second Jewish-Roman War, 132-35 CE. The aim of these books is the creation of Jesus as the Jewish pagan God-man. Many of the myth types that were common in Greco-Roman mystery religions are in these books, such as miraculous birth, dying and rising God, a miracle worker persecuted by authorities. What fictional Jesus said about the poor is irrelevant, unless understood as mythology. The New Testament book of James, Jacob, does express much Jewish thought, so much so that the anti-Semite Martin Luther didn't think it belonged in the New Testament. James writes about God's judgment on rich oppressors in the last days, we can only hope. Since the sinner's wealth is stored up for the righteous, who will be kind to the poor, Ecclesiastes 2, verse 26, what should Ground Cover do to alleviate the suffering of the poor but were empowered to do so? I think making a rural investment in a writing program and turning Ground Cover into more of an educational institution besides being a news provider would be the best solution for us.
Here we have a poem by a Mary Jade Bay ground cover vendor, number 660. It's titled, Respect My Flow. When you see me, say hey. I'm your sistar and peer, living my life and always glad to be here. Respect my flow, because I got it going on. Pretty and smart, always keep a smile on. They tried to jock me, but I always hold it down. Above average, an original sound. With the style so clean, don't be surprised if I'm on a magazine. Life is so special that in a time so rare, no pity parties when life's not fair. We're strong, we innovate, no swerve on the team. We were made to elevate, so let's do the damn thing. Respect My Flow by Amiri Jade Bay, ground cover vendor number 660.
Ann Arbor and Ypsilanti City Councils passed legislation that protect the housing insecure, by Lindsay Kalka, read by Jane Atkins. Monday, January 6th, Ann Arbor City Council unanimously passed Ordinance 242106, nicknamed the Junk Fee Ban, that caps application fees at $50 and makes the fees refundable if applicants don't receive an offer for the apartment. The resolution also bans all waitlist fees. Further, the ordinance bans all fees before move-in, except the $50 application fee and the security deposit. It also lays out punishments of up to $1,000 for landlords who don't follow the law. This ordinance, brought forth by council members Travis Redina and Cynthia Harrison, addressed many of the demands that the Ann Arbor Tenants Union laid out in their Trash the Junk Fees petition, which was launched in April of this year. The petition can be read full at bit.ly-a2junkfees. The AATU first presented its petition demands aimed at the Ann Arbor City Council and at the Michigan State Legislature in April 2024 in response to local landlords charging enormous waitlist fees, some costing up to $6,745. Quote, passage of this resolution marks a huge step forward for tenants who simply cannot afford these outrageously expensive junk fees. We don't believe a tenant should have to pay anything before moving in. However, capping refundable application fees at $50 per unit is a reasonable path forward. The AATU is happy to see this ordinance pass, and we hope to see it followed by a more robust tenant protections in Ann Arbor, said AATU Representative Nathan Kim. The next day, on the east side of the country, Ypsilanti City Council discussed two familiar topics, unarmed response and permanent shelter. Newly elected Ward 3 council member Amber Fellows and incumbent council member Desiree Simmons brought forward two resolutions, 2025-007 and 2025-008, that requested support and funding from the Washtenaw County government for permanent shelter and non-police crisis response, respectively. Unlike the ordinance in Ann Arbor, which enacts immediate protections for renters, resolutions 2025-007 and 2025-008 require movement from another government entity to realize their full impact. Still, the resolutions don't simply push the ball into the county's court. 007 includes a shelter development timeline, a community engagement plan, and a commitment to collaborate with local partners. 008 resolves to post a request for proposals for an unarmed crisis program that will coordinate triage with EMS and police departments. These two resolutions also passed unanimously to the excitement of the public attendees. One Ypsilanti resident even brought chocolate cake and tea to the council members for their appreciation. Ann Arbor and Ypsilanti are listening to people experiencing homelessness and housing insecurity and taking action. Advocacy is still needed to bring this change to the county level.
A Brighter Way Shines for the Marginalized in Ypsilanti by Jim Clark, ground cover, vendor 139. A Brighter Way is a community nonprofit with headquarters in downtown Ypsilanti. This peer mentoring organization specializes in guiding formerly incarcerated people through reentry to society. Peer mentoring happens when people who have lived experience of a situation help those who are currently going through one. Alcoholics Anonymous is a classic example. The concept of staying sober by helping someone else stay sober crosses over many areas of human life. Surviving cancer, grieving, and substance abuse issues all have programs to bring survivors together. A Brighter Way is such a program that helps people who have been incarcerated or justice impacted by providing social support and service connections. Something unique about A Brighter Way is that they have over 130 years of combined lived experience. Laquan Hill was incarcerated for 16 years for a crime he admits to committing. He is affectionately known as Q, because according to Laquan, people have a tendency to butcher my name. After successfully completing parole on April 8, 2024, Q now serves the community as the deputy director of A Brighter Way. What does the organization do? A Brighter Way navigates, stated Q. We meet the person where they're at and help them find their way to success as they see fit. We assist individuals that have situations with the criminal punishment system. I call it that because it's a system designed to punish people for crimes against society. That is not justice. That is punishment. Justice is about restoration and rehabilitation. The Michigan Department of Corrections espouses rehabilitation, but is still punitive in nature. They are making strides, so I am hopeful. Q continued, a person who has been incarcerated may not have any friends or family to support them when they get out. Often this means being homeless upon release. A Brighter Way helps that person find the necessary resources that can help them find a place that they can call home. People who have been incarcerated for a very long time may need help getting caught up due to significant gap in knowledge of technology. Still others may have medical or psychiatric needs, but not have the skills to meet them. These are just a few of the ways we provide support. A Brighter Way helps by connecting people to the resources they need while also being a guide throughout the process. One of the things that makes A Brighter Way stand out from other peer support programs is that the workers take the time to fact-check and make sure all the resources they connect people with are active and up-to-date. Q said, you have to vet your resources. What I mean by that is when someone has limited means, getting transportation, for example, is a big deal. The timing is important. If you spend all day lining up transportation to get to a food bank or to a county service, only to find out that the hours were wrong or changed, that can have a serious impact on your emotional and situational reality. There have been times when I was on the edge of making a bad choice, but a note on a flyer opened a door and gave me a different option. Had I got there to find the office closed, things might have gone differently. When resource information is false, it may appear like a simple inconvenience, but it also may have life-threatening consequences. A Brighter Way is located at 124 Pearl Street in Ypsilanti. This part of the downtown area has been a theater of struggle between local business owners, the community of unhoused people living on the street, and the people who work to alleviate homelessness. A number of the people on the street who are affected by this struggle seek services from A Brighter Way. I asked Q how he thought the situation should be handled. We need to collaborate. Everyone wants to see the systemic condition solved. The answer, though, is not to simply kick the can down the road, or worse, sweep it under the rug by ramping up more police presence. The answer is to provide a place for people to be and to get the resources and wraparound care they need. This is a community dilemma, and we need a community resolution. Many people who need the services of A Brighter Way are homeless or housing insecure. A Brighter Way is a valuable resource which is vital to a safe, stable, and supportive community.
Where is art hiding in Ann Arbor? Undercover Intel, Cindy Gear. Ground cover vendor number 279. 2025 is all about being alive and exploring art in Ann Arbor. Sweetwater's on Washington Street. I wandered into Sweetwater's, where you are surrounded by amazing art works from the Huron Valley Art Collective, a wonderful art group that works on with businesses to display their creations. There is art on just about every wall. Many artists come from all over Michigan to show their art talents. The variety of art is very inviting. Each piece is for sale. The artists give a brief bio of their past and write about the kind of art they display, sometimes including QR codes to show more of what they have to offer. Many artists nowadays have full web pages and independent websites where they show their work and studio. Crazy Wisdom, my next stop, was one of my personal favorites, the one and only Crazy Wisdom. This shop holds many wonderful artworks from around the world, ranging from wall art to sculptures and jewelry. I was told they have sculptures from Spain and carvings from Indonesia. As a Native American, I love the dream catchers and the wall hangings. Crazy Wisdom has many jewelry artists, and much of the work is shown in display boxes around and front of the building. The artwork at Crazy Wisdom is spiritual in nature, but also eye-catching. They reopened in 2023. Their annual magazine is a wonderful way to connect with like-minded people in a spiritual and holistic way. WSG Gallery. My next stop was the intriguing WSG Gallery on Ann Street that carries absolutely one-of-a-kind artworks from artists all over the state. Each artist contributes their time back into the gallery. The gallery is owned and operated by the Artist Collective. Much of this art is very inspiring and modern, as well as traditional. It's a wonderful group effort in which artists bring back art to the city. This gallery closed for some time because of COVID-19 and now has reopened to the public. So do stop by and see great and inspiring art. Chris Norden. I took a hop, skip, and jump into the shop of one-of-a-kind artist, Chris Norden, a glass blower, which is right next to WSG. He does awe-inspiring pieces. He also brings from around the nation well-known artists to show their great works of art within his gallery. What I find so amazing about Norden's artwork is the mix of metal and glass hanging from ceilings in offices around the nation. Glass is a hard medium to work with and extremely fragile. This makes it far more valuable to show to the world, in my opinion. You add light to the works and you get wonderful art. You just need to go and experience this expressive form of art. Thursday and Friday, 12 to 4 p.m. and Saturday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. 10,000 Villages. My next stop was 10,000 Villages on Main Street. I walked in and immediately saw silk scarves that I fell in love with. Each one was bright and colorful. This wonderful shop practices fair trade with artists on the other side of the world and brings in amazing artworks to you and me. Fair trade gives artists equal opportunity in their communities and helps them with a living wage. It is an international partnership that has lasted for decades. The amazing principles of fair trade ensures the rights of artists in their home nations. Sustainable development environmental friendly partnerships, pay promptly and fairly, as well as I walked through the gallery. I saw many functional artworks, such as jewelry, kitchenware, wall hangings, and scarves of many colors. Please come and see 10,000 Villages as they are celebrating their 20th year anniversary as of October. Makeshift Gallery. The Makeshift Gallery was created by a small group of local artists as a pop-up in 2022. This group expanded with other local artists to create a locals-only art gallery for equal exposure and fair pay practices. Many high-end galleries take advantage of artists with the amount of cut each gallery takes, often leaving the artists out in the cold. The Makeshift and other co-opt galleries are forcing real change for artist work. Honest work for honest pay. The Makeshift was created by Cheryl Doherty and Jim Moran, but many artists are part of the gallery. This is the next gallery I hope to find my own work in sometime soon. The Makeshift Gallery is a one-of-a-kind art collective. The artists themselves come together and show their work to the world, but also take the time to do both behind-the-scenes work and help with the front desk during open hours. This gallery has shows with invited musicians and has amazing events with open mics and concerts on Friday nights. Their events bring in the public to show off the artist's work. There is a featured artist's wall, and some not only talented but also popular artists as well. This wonderful location at 407 East Liberty Street is not to be missed. The kind of art available here are fine art, photography, painting, mixed media, ceramics, jewelry, musical instruments. Come see this art from Wednesday through Saturday, 1 to 7, and Sunday, noon to 5. The Ann Arbor Art Center, A2AC, the Ann Arbor Art Center. I popped in to see all the wonderful A2AC activities that blanket the downtown area with their public art projects. They paint on all the planters across the downtown area and the murals on the buildings and in the alleys. A2AC has memberships, drop-in art shows for the public. What I found amazing is that this gallery just about does it all as a very active space. You don't just get art, but also classes for the public and many camps for teens to further art education. The classes help bring art into each home across Ann Arbor, as well as new art ideas from artists. I always wanted to take their ceramic classes and jewelry classes. There are adult classes each as ceramics, comics, printmaking, jewelry, and 2D sculpture art classes show the public the time it takes to be an artist and the complexity. Artists, both local and national, are showcased within the gallery. A2AC also has ongoing social events for fundraising. This gallery truly takes care of the artists in the gallery by giving them full public exposure and also placing art around Ann Arbor in offices and corporations. the Gutman Gallery, the Guild of Artists and Artisans, was created in 1973 with the mission of bringing artists to the public in an art fair. This annual event became what is today the Ann Arbor Art Fair, helping hundreds of artists from across the nation earn a reasonable living from their art. Art fairs have popped up all over the United States. Many artists travel from fair to fair for months on end. The Guild also helps local fairs across Michigan and through its affiliated Gutman Gallery helps local and international artists get shown. I've also been to many holiday events and many independent shows focused on themes such as masks or watercolors. U of M Art Space. The Stamps Gallery, located on Washington Street and South Division, that show many world-renowned artists as well as works from the University of Michigan art students. Last but not least, the University of Michigan Museum of Art, UMA, shows many international works of art and national artists from many cultures, such as Native artists from the Ojibwe Nation, as well as classical art.
In loving memory of Doug Redlin, November 16, 1979 to January 2, 2025, read by Ari Rosinski. Doug Redlin was born in the Detroit area. After some rough early times, he was adopted and spent his formative years in the Macomb and Oakland areas, including Hazel Park. Doug especially cared about his adoptive father and would reminisce about time spent with him and all that he learned from his dad. He spent his final years in Washtenaw County and was well known in the community for his big heart, love of dogs, and supreme survival skills. He is survived by his fiancée, Carly Dixon, and their baby, Philip Doug Redlin, who is expected to be born in May. Quote, Doug was the hardest person I've ever met to love. He was also the easiest. Doug's genuineness was his greatest asset. He believed in community and he believed in our community. He considered us family. He wanted camaraderie. He wanted brothers. He wanted his pack. Doug's temper was formidable, but he knew it. He was aware of his issues and was asking for help. We were ready for him. He would have stepped up if he was meant to go on. With his first child on the way, he knew it was time to man up. He would have made it. We would have made sure of it. Doug, you are loved. End quote. Jim Clark, ground cover vendor number 139. Quote, Doug could be tough as a result of his struggles so that not many people got to know him well. But Doug was always cool with me, and I can attest there was a great deal of good in him. He was not only perceptive about individuals and about humans in general, he was also thoughtful and respectful when he felt you returned it. Many times, his insights helped me a lot. He would give you presents, just little things that he thought you would like. Looking for stuff for Carly, I ran across a video of him explaining to me about some funny color-changing light bulbs he gave me. It absolutely breaks my heart that he gave out before he was able to reach his dream of being a father. But the joy those sonograms and doctor's visits gave him was real. I'll miss you, Doug. End quote. Cynthia Price, ground cover editor. Quote, one of the first times I met Doug must have been at Pizza in the Park. He charged across the plaza and approached me like we were already familiar, very confidently asking if I could give him a ride somewhere or whatever it was he needed. It was something I couldn't help with, but there were no hard feelings, and he kept my attention by talking my ear off instead, as if he was set on leaving an imprint and making sure by the time we're done I would remember him. I did then and I will now. End quote. Alexandra Granberg. Quote, Doug, myself, and Gracie drove around the city on a terribly cold evening to check on anyone we could find. Doug knew every nook and cranny, and we were stocked with the blankets, hand warmers, and chili. He was so kind, and he sure loved dogs, end quote. Karen Jacobson. Quote, Dougie, I've always respected your loyalty. You are a genuine family man. I know you will find peace on the other side. Much love. End quote. Brian Durance. Quote, like so many, you are a complicated individual. I'll remember that you love to cook for people and would use limited bridge card money to buy food to cook for warming center and weather amnesty guests. R.I.P. Doug. May you find the peace that so eluded you in this realm. I know you are cooking up a feast, making art, and smoking with Brian. End quote. Sherry Wander. Doug's celebration of life will take place on Tuesday, January 14th at 11 a.m. at the Ypsilanti Freight House, parentheses, 100 Marketplace.
Title of the article is President Jimmy Carter exemplified Dr. King's vision of a beloved community by Will Shakespeare. Here the article says, hello, 2025, farewell, 2024. In the afternoon and evening of December 29, 2024, the major broadcast news and cable news outlets announced that former President Jimmy Carter had died. He was the 39th President of the United States. What else do we know about Jimmy Carter? He was born in 1924 in a rural southern Georgia town known as Plains, P-L-A-I-N-S. His father was a peanut farmer who owned a large farm. His mother was a registered nurse. Young Jimmy Carter grew up in a house with no plumbing, no electricity, and no running water. His community was mostly rural and poor. He spent time with poor white and black kids in his rural farm community. His family members attended church services in Plains as evangelical Christians. Jimmy Carter identified as a long-term member of the Southern Baptist Evangelical Christian Church. He was a man of faith. He had accepted Jesus Christ as his personal savior. After high school, Carter attended the U.S. Naval Academy and was trained as a nuclear engineer for a Navy submarine. He graduated in 1946 and came home to Georgia. He asked an adorable young woman, Rosalind, for a date. They went to the theater to see a movie. Soon after, he proposed to her, and subsequently, they got married. His career as a Navy nuclear engineer was cut short when his father died. Carter returned to Plains in 1953 to continue his father's peanut farming business. Southern Georgia was a bastion of racism and discrimination during the Jim Crow era of the 1950s and 1960s. Young Carter's neighbors, who were members of a white supremacy group, incessantly tried to get him to join. He repeatedly said no, even when they offered to pay the membership dues of $5 for him. He was ridiculed by the racist group. They called him all kinds of derogatory names. Carter said that he was aware of the racism, discrimination, and racial injustice in his home state. He wanted to bring opportunities in education, jobs, and housing to the disadvantaged and the dispossessed. He served two terms as a state senator in Georgia during the 1960s. In the 1970s, he ran for governor. He won. During his February 12, 1971 inaugural speech, he got everyone's attention when he declared, "I say to you, quite frankly, the time for racial discrimination is over." Carter served as governor of Georgia for one term, which ended in 1975. In 1976, he ran for president of the United States. America, as a nation, was mired in the melancholy and sadness over the Watergate breaking crisis, which resulted in the articles of impeachment against President Richard M. Nixon. He has resigned in 1974, and his replacement, Gerald R. Ford of Grand Rapids, Michigan, was immediately sworn in as the 38th president. After Carter declared his intention to run for president, a large cross-section of the American people kept asking, "Jimmy who?" Aware of his lack of name recognition, Carter, on the campaign trail of 1975 and 1976, will often say, "My name is Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for president." Carter won the Democratic presidential nomination and defeated President Gerald Ford, the Republican nominee, in the November 1976 election. As president, Jimmy Carter appointed more women in key positions and federal courts than any of the previous presidents. He also appointed more black people and other minorities to key positions than any of the previous presidents. President Carter was credited for improving the lives of safety net population in the areas of public health, housing, and other human service provisions. However, high food inflation, high interest rates, high gas prices, and high unemployment rates doomed his chances for re-election against Ronald Reagan, who repeatedly used the slogan, "Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago?" The Iran hostage crisis was a drag on his superlative foreign policy achievements, especially the Camp David Accords, which established a historic framework for peace between Israel and Egypt. Many historians say that President Carter's 4 decades of service after he left the White House was a remarkable accomplishment. Carter and his wife, Rosalynn, traveled the world after they built the Carter Center at Emory University in Atlanta, and another one in Plains. The Carter Center was a platform for the Carters to visit poor communities in developing nations to help address infectious diseases such as malaria, guinea worms, and HIV/AIDS. They also helped to feed the poor, house the homeless, provide safe drinking water, build roads, hospitals, and community centers, and helped with a team of trained observers to monitor presidential elections in Africa, Southeast Asia, Central America, and South America. Domestically, President Rosalynn Carter entered into a partnership with Habitat for Humanity, which has lasted for more than 40 years. Habitat for Humanity, in quote, envisions a world where everyone has a decent place to live. And President Carter was truly one of the great lights illuminating our path to that globe, to that goal. Says a tribute posted by the East Bay Silicon Valley chapter of Habitat for Humanity. This California chapter continues. President Carter famously said, "I have one life and one chance to make it count for something. My faith demands that I do whatever I can, wherever I can, whenever I can, for as long as I can, with whatever I have to try to make a difference. We are deeply grateful for his 100 years of making it count toward the building of a better tomorrow." Subtitle: Dr. King's vision of the beloved community. On the topic of the beloved community, the King Center in Atlanta made it clear that the term was first coined by the 20th century philosopher, theologian, Josiah Royce, founder of the Fellowship of Reconciliation. Dr. King became a member of Fellowship of Reconciliation and later popularized the term and invested it with deeper meaning, which has captured the imagination of people of goodwill all over the world. Dr. King did not believe that the beloved community was a lofty utopian goal. The King Center said that King envisioned the beloved community to be a realistic, achievable goal that will be attained by a critical mass of people committed to and trained in the philosophy and methods of nonviolence. Historians and civil rights scholars revealed that as early as 1956, when the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the Montgomery Boy Scout organizers, thereby ending segregation of buses, Dr. King said that the beloved community is the end goal of a nonviolent boycott. In 1957, Dr. King read a sermon titled "The Birth of a New Nation," in which he said that the aftermath of nonviolence is the creation of the beloved community. The aftermath of nonviolence is redemption. The aftermath of nonviolence is reconciliation. Dr. King gave a 1959 sermon, which he dedicated to the lessons learned from Gandhi's philosophy and techniques of nonviolence. Once again, Dr. King said, the aftermath of nonviolence is the creation of the beloved community so that when the battles is over, a new relationship comes into being between the oppressed and the oppressor. Some historians have also noted that Dr. King made a reference to the beloved community as the end result of nonviolence in his 1963 letters from the Birmingham jail. Many scholars from various disciplines, such as sociology, political science, and law, have tried to share many of the perspectives on King's vision of the beloved community. A more compelling summary and interpretation from the editors of the King Center in Atlanta. They wrote, Dr. King's beloved community is a global vision in which all people can share in the wealth of the earth. In the beloved community, poverty, hunger, and homelessness will not be tolerated because international standards of human decency will not allow it. Racism and all forms of discrimination, bigotry and prejudice will be replaced by an all-inclusive spirit of sisterhood and brotherhood. In the beloved community, international disputes will be resolved by peaceful conflict resolution and reconciliation of adversaries instead of military power. Love and trust will triumph over fear and hatred. Peace and justice will prevail over war and military conflict. Conclusion. Now, it is abundantly clear what Dr. King's vision for the beloved community means. In his writings, sermons, and speeches, Dr. King provides us with an expansive conception of the beloved community. The central messages are nonviolence and reconciliation. In addition to the panoply of social justice, economic justice, service, global vision, peaceful coexistence, equal rights, civil rights, human rights, etc. On an interpersonal level, the beloved community vision requires mutual respect, mutual love, and a sense of dignity, empathy, and sympathy for all of God's children. The beloved community vision has never been about tolerating discrimination, racism, hatred, tribalism, or targeting and conspiring against certain individuals or communities who are considered different. As some culprits will say, not one of us. President Jimmy Carter's life and legacy reflect Dr. King's vision of beloved community. Both of them had a global vision about the solutions to poverty, inequality, hunger, and homelessness, and promoting democracy's basic norms of free and fair elections. A recent Associated Press article noted that President Carter and Dr. King never met. However, they seem to have lived parallel lives as they worked hard to end discrimination, racism, poverty, hunger, and homelessness, to mention a few. We do know that Jimmy Carter reached out to Dr. King's father, MLK Sr., and Dr. King's widow, Mrs. Coretta Scott King, after Carter was sworn in as governor of Georgia on February 12, 1971. At Carter's insistence, Dr. King's birthplace and the old Ebenezer Baptist Church were designated historical preservation landmarks. As we pay homage to Carter's legacy, let's remember Dr. King's admonition: darkness cannot drive away darkness. Only light can do that. Hatred cannot drive away hatred. Only love can do that. Finally, this Martin Luther King Jr. quote reflects the global perspective he shared with his beloved community volunteers, including President Jimmy Carter. Here is a quote: "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly." Source of the quote: Dr. King's letter from Birmingham, Alabama jail, April 16, 1963. Thank you.
Hay sen que manera de vamos joven y la caballero y 1947. En español, el agradecimiento a la cultura por el triunfo de la revolución cubana. Salieron a seducir en los años 60 una tripulación sin rumbo para conquistar el destino de una mano despiadada al imperialismo yanqui. Como un buen revolucionario dio un paso y unas desgracias sobornadas por Estados Unidos, traicionó los pasos del navegante y con carta de luto sin conocer las líneas refugiarias, gritó: ¡Viva Zapata! El llanto no puede entender tanta amargura, desde sus labios amargos solo soportó el dolor de un niño. Una madre con un temblor negro solo miró el agua donde pudo soltar el arrepentimiento y la alegría de un vagabundo.